Listeners should be aware that this episode of the Finding North podcast makes some references to and contains actual audio recordings of some of the worst incidents of the last 100 years. If you feel like this might affect you in any way, please feel free to skip this episode, and we'll catch up with you again next week. Welcome to the Finding North podcast. I'm Chris Morris. This week's story is part one of a two-part story. Part two will release at the end of this season of the Finding North podcast. Please enjoy. Adam had the same nightmare almost every night. The one that made him wake up tasting the salt of his own sweat, that set his head pulsing and his stomach on fire. And although the events of the nightmare would stay much the same, the scenery sometimes changed. Tonight's nightmare began in a lovely green meadow, underneath a crisp blue sky. He'd been lying on his back at the foot of a large oak tree, staring into the cloudless sky and thinking of nothing. It was spring, and the orange and yellow daffodils swayed pleasantly in the breeze, their back and forth action making Adam's eyes feel heavy. And if he wasn't already asleep, he would probably drift off now. The peculiar thing about these dreams was that Adam always knew that they were just that, dreams. And every time he dreamed them, he would later feel foolish for not realising that things were about to go sour. It started, as it always did, with the darkening of the sky. Rain? Oh no, I was having such a pleasant day. But rain did not follow. Next came the roar, a tremendous far-off boom that seemed to knock straight through Adam's chest and threaten his very heart. The rumble could be felt all the way through the grass that he lay upon and into every part of his body. Thunder? Even worse. But there was no thunder. Then he would smell the fire. The stinging, biting, choking smell of smoke began subtly and then buried itself inside Adam's lungs. But there was no fire nearby that he could see. And besides, a fire so intense as the one he smelled must have been enough to brighten the dark sky above him. But then he felt it. His skin began to warm and then grow impossibly hot. He sat up and slapped at the parts of the face he was sure had caught fire. He tried to scream, but his throat felt choked, as though some great evil had lodged itself inside there and refused to move until Adam's lifeless body was sent to the floor in a blackened mess. Then he saw it. He looked at his arms and they were burned, as though they were a cheap meal left inside an oven for too long. When his vision started to blur, he knew it must have been because his eyes had begun to melt. And then he realised that he'd been through all of this before. He'd experienced it plenty of times. It was a dream, nothing more. But it didn't help to quell the horror. He threw himself to the burning grass and curled up into a ball until he woke up, screaming.
It's disgusting. Completely unacceptable. We cannot accept these people. I'm sure the General will agree. Call him at once.
The General is busy at the moment.
Busy? What in the world could be more important than this? We need a decision. These people cannot be allowed to continue.
I know. I'll call him as soon as he's out of his meeting. No matter how far a parent gets in their career, their child is their first priority. Even when Mateus climbed the ranks of the military, he would answer phone calls from school about his children's progress. Even as he became a corporal, sergeant, lieutenant, all the way to general, his children came first. Because it was well known, well accepted, that children were the future, and the future was important. So when the head teacher, Mrs. Fotos, called General Mateus Skodadi and asked him to come in to speak about his youngest child at once, he cancelled 2 afternoon meetings in order to travel to the school immediately.
"I'm sorry to have called you in so promptly, General," Mrs. Fotos said. "I know your schedule is demanding, but something happened this afternoon that I thought I ought to make you aware of as soon as possible."
"That's quite all right," Matthias said. "What's happened?" Mrs. Fotos took in a deep breath. She looked at Matthias with eyes that looked as though they did not particularly want the mouth to speak.
"Your daughter had a little falling out with another girl in the class yesterday. She might have said something about this."
"Yes," Matthias said.
The small girl with the glasses. Irene, I think her name is. Yes, Irene. She sits at a different table to your Cassandra, the blue table. Anyway, you'll be aware that Irene has learning difficulties. Yes, I believe she has a form of autism. She has difficulty judging social situations, and it's often difficult for her to know right from wrong, poor girl. Yesterday she took a bite out of Cassandra's sandwich. Apparently the rest of the children at Irene's table laughed about it. Mrs. Photos nodded. That's right, General. So Cassandra spoke to you about it? She did, Matthias said. She was rather more upset about it than she ought to have been, I have to say. Well, we had a chat about it. I told her that Irene didn't mean to make her upset, that sometimes people just do things we don't like, but that we must put ourselves in their shoes. She said she didn't want to put herself in Irene's shoes, and that she must have known that what she did was wrong. I said perhaps she did, perhaps she didn't, but either way, when we show kindness to those we don't know, we earn it back. She didn't seem very interested. I told her to take some time to think about it, and perhaps we could talk about it again in a few days' time. Mrs. Photos sighed once more. I'm afraid the event must have angered her too much on this occasion. Today she retaliated. Matthias's heart dropped. Oh dear, what's happened? Well, at lunchtime today, the blue table were eating their lunch when all of a sudden they were drenched. Drenched? Matthias asked, confused. Were they outside in the rain? No, Mrs. Photos shook her head. I'm afraid it was Cassandra. She ran over to the blue table and soaked all of the children with water from her bottle, covered their lunches too, so that many of them were inedible. But that wasn't the worst of it, General. Matthias leaned forwards in his chair. He raised a concerned eyebrow. Not the worst of it? My goodness, what else did she do? Mrs. Photos took a deep breath. Well, the blue table were also working on a mural. A lovely looking thing it was too. The children had been painting a large scene of themselves at play. They even included many of the staff in their picture. I'm afraid Cassandra threw an entire pot of paint over it. It's completely ruined. Matthias looked at the teacher. Their eyes locked, Mrs. Photos' expression a grim one, and Matthias thought that his own was similar. His hot brow began to sweat, and he could feel it dribble down his face. You're sure it was Cassandra? Mrs. Photos nodded. I saw her do it myself, General. I'm sorry. Well, Matthias started. That's very serious. Indeed, Mrs. Photos agreed. We'll have to discuss further what steps we need to take from here. Yes, quite, Matthias said. He felt his phone vibrate in his pocket. Excuse me. He picked the phone out of his pocket and looked at the screen, a message from HQ. Problematic civilization. Presence urgently requested. Matthias looked at Mrs. Photos once more. Apologies, I must get off to HQ. Can I speak to Cassandra before I leave? Adam was having another nightmare. The scene this time was his own bedroom. His wife lay asleep to his side at one moment, and at the next she was suddenly below him. He hovered in the air, looking down at his own bed, his own sleeping wife, and then almost chuckled to himself. After all the many months of nightmares, at least this one was a little different. He knew he'd soon hit the ceiling and then come crashing back down to his bed, and wondered if that would be when the sky began to darken. But then he realised that the sky already was dark. It was night. Well, let's see where this one goes. But then something unexpected happened. His body seemed to have somehow whispered through the ceiling, through the roof, and into the night sky. He floated upwards with haste, but he felt none of the sensations that he would have had this been possible in the waking world. He couldn't feel the chill of the air, the expected jump in the stomach one would likely feel when racing up to the clouds. He felt asleep. As he raced higher, the world around him blackened. He could see stars now, and thought this particularly strange, as his body had not turned towards the sky to see them. Then he saw a magnificent, terrifying, wondrous sight in front of him. The Earth. The whole planet faced him. He could see the shapes of the continents and could see his own country as he raced away from it. Then he was too far away, and he could only see a blue marble hanging in the great void of space. The stars around the planet seemed to stretch as he was hurled away faster. And when he closed his eyes and felt the lids touch each other, he realised that this was no nightmare at all. Cassandra's face was downcast. she wouldn't look her father in the eye. Matthias sat at the Reds table, vacated except for he and Cassandra. "Mrs. Fotos told me about your incident," Matthias said. Cassandra said nothing. She sat with her arms folded and stared at the corner of the room as if her father wasn't there at all.
"You can't do things like that, Cassandra. It's unacceptable."
"But Irene..." "I know what Irene did," Matthias interrupted. "But that doesn't mean that what you did was right. And you made some of the other children suffer too."
"They deserved it," Cassandra said simply.
Matthias leaned into his daughter with interest.
"Why is that, Cassandra?"
"They laughed. They thought it was really funny. They're evil." Matthias sighed. He took one of his daughter's hands in his own.
"No, they're not, sweetheart.
I have seen evil, and it looks nothing like that."
"What does it look like then?" Cassandra asked.
Matthias smiled warmly. Cassandra now met his eyes. "It is likely you will never see it, and thankfully so. But if you did, you'd know it straight away." Silence fell between them. The sounds of laughing children from other rooms and the buzz of Matthias's phone were made clear. He looked at it. Another message. "Representative from Problematic Civilization procured. Trial will begin when you are here. ETA?" Matthias slipped the phone back into his pocket without replying. He squeezed Cassandra's shoulder.
"This is not how civilized people deal with their problems, my love. You need to apologize to everyone involved and to Mrs. Fotos. Nobody is asking you to be friends with Irene or anyone who laughed. But you mustn't be unkind to anyone. Do you understand?" Cassandra nodded.
"All right. Well, I need to go and sort something out at work. We'll talk more about this later, okay?" She nodded once more. A tear slid its way secretively down her cheek. Matthias stood and made for the door. But Cassandra stopped him. Running over to him and wrapping her arms around his legs, she said,
"I'm sorry, Daddy. I love you."
Matthias squeezed his little girl. "I love you too."
"Hold him down! He's panicking! We need to get the translator attached! I can't attach anything to him whilst he's kicking about like that! What's the datum then? I'm trying! Where's the general? Is he at the meeting?"
"He's on his way. He just responded with his ETA. Should just be a few minutes."
"Thank goodness. We need him to explain what's going on to this being. He'll calm him down."
"Yeah, until he realises what's going to happen to his planet." The strange thing in front of Adam continued to say words that sounded like no language he knew.
"Opkan kulos, erevetime dumaile! Stay away from me," Adam cried. "Keep that thing to yourselves."
The being that had spoken held some sort of collar towards Adam and had been trying to attach it to his neck. Adam was sitting on top of the kind of bed you got in hospitals, except there were no pillows, nothing of comfort on top of it. The room was filled with a dozen strange-looking humanoid figures, although Adam couldn't call them humans in the way that he understood it. Their skins were a strange mix of green and blue, and their eyes glowed with an unearthly shine. There were various strange machines plugged into walls, with lights flashing and occasional beeps sounding from all around. At the far end of the room, a set of automatic double doors opened, and a being that looked to be wearing some kind of military uniform strode in. His neat green shirt was adorned with various medals, just like any experienced officer back home would have. His face was calm, and he kept his eyes fixed on Adam as he walked towards him.
"Juniparon, eres mon gillen, iri pulon garth."
The soldier put up a hand, keeping his eyes on Adam.
"Who are you? Where am I? What on earth is going on?"
The soldier took the collar from one of the others and held it towards Adam.
"Zaisian fiani, traductor. Anuvadak, translator."
"Translator," Adam repeated. The soldier nodded. Adam stuck out a hand.
"Let me do it myself."
The soldier nodded again and let Adam take the device. After a little inspection, he unclasped it and attached it around his neck.
"Do you understand us now?" the soldier said. "You're speaking English now," Adam said. "Thank goodness."
The soldier shook his head. "I'm speaking my own language. The translator around your neck is letting you hear us in your language, this English you speak of. One of the most common languages on your planet, I understand. We can hear you in our language, too."
"My planet," Adam said. "Yeah, how is it that I'm not on my planet? How did you get me here? Why am I here?"
"Let's start with some introductions," the soldier said. I'm General Matthias Squidati. What's your name?
Adam, now would you mind telling me why you've abducted me?
The General was handed a document from one of the others and began rifling through it as he spoke. Your planet has been a little problematic.
Problematic? To who? For who?
To and for the rest of the universe, the General responded.
Tier, oh tier. Mass killings, genocides, war, and nuclear weapons. Those have actually been used as well.
Right, hold on, Adam said. He sat upright on the metal bed he'd woken on. Am I really here to answer for my entire species? Yeah, we've made a few mistakes, but I'm a nobody in that place. Why didn't you beam up a president or a prime minister or somebody?
The General raised an eyebrow.
Sorry, beam up?
Well, I don't know how it works. Whatever it was you did to get me here, you should have taken someone in charge.
The General stepped over to one of the machines against the wall. It looked like a large supercomputer from one of the science fiction films Adam had stayed up too late to watch. This thing here helps us to determine who to meet from a problem planet. It's been monitoring your homeland for many years now, and it knows a lot about the people who live there. It selects someone who is articulate, someone who knows the planet well, someone who cares.
But there must have been thousands, millions of us like that, Adam argued.
Yes, there were, the General agreed. Then the selection process gets a little random, but it chose you, and in that we must trust.
So what? I'm being put on trial?
Not you personally, the General said. Your people. We'd like to show you a few things and get your thoughts on them. Chrysanth, do you have the recordings ready? A lady to Adam's left nodded. She had another device in her hand. This one looked like a weird, futuristic VR headset. She walked over to Adam. This will show you some of the observations we've taken of your planet. Earth, you call it, don't you? These scenes are some of the most, well, concerning things we've seen from your species.
Why? Adam asked. Why are you showing me these things?
Like I said, the General, who had taken a headset of his own, said, we'd like to get some of your thoughts about it all, before we come to our decision.
I must warn you, sir, Chrysanth said. Some of these things are simply shocking. One of the worst cases I've ever dealt with. It's, well, it's really, really bad.
All right, the General said. He had taken a seat next to the bed Adam was sitting on. Are you ready, Adam? You'd best lie down when you watch this. The technology is very immersive. I doubt you're used to anything like that on your planet. Adam sighed.
All right.
He took the headset from the lady and placed it over his head before lying down on the bed. A voice from somewhere else in the room sounded. All right then, here we go. Brace yourselves. This isn't nice. Not at all.
April 1994. The presidents of Rwanda and Burundi are killed when their plane is shot down over Kigali Airport, sparking one of the worst genocides in the history of the planet. Over the course of 100 days, 800,000 Rwandan men, women and children are brutally slaughtered in the name of ethnic cleansing. The rest of the world, including those who have the power to stop it, largely turn a blind eye.
When the death is all around you, there's nothing else you think apart from them. I was numb. I was ready. I knew I would be killed anytime.
September 2001. A group of 19 terrorists hijack 4 passenger airplanes. 2 are flown into the World Trade Center. 1 crashes into the Pentagon. And at last, nosedives into a field in Pennsylvania after the passengers try to regain control. 2,996 people die in the name of a demented ideology.
Matt, I've never seen any. It looks like a movie. I saw a large plane, like a jet, going immediately headed directly into the World Trade Center. It just flew into the other tower, coming from south to north. I watched the plane fly into the World Trade Center.
September 1939. A second conflict involving almost every nation on Earth begins after Nazi Germany invades Poland. Under Adolf Hitler, 6 million Jewish people are killed.
The war ends when the US develops a devastating new weapon that is unleashed upon civilians in Hiroshima and Nagasaki, killing 226,000 people. Over 73 million people around the world died.
Dass ich anständig meine Zeit verwendet habe im Dienste meines Volkes, gib du jetzt deine Stimme ab. Wenn ja, dann tritt für mich ein, so wie ich für dich eingetreten bin.
March 1996. A gunman walks into Dunblane Primary School in Scotland, armed with four legally owned firearms. He shoots dead 16 five-year-old schoolchildren and their teacher, before turning one of the guns on himself. The headteacher rushes to the gym hall to find the blood of innocent children splattered across the floor and walls, the screaming and crying of those who had not yet died, and unfathomable violence.
Evil visited us yesterday, and we don't know why. We don't understand it, and I guess we never will.
Death, destruction, murder, rape, war, mass shootings, mass killings. All of it swirled around in Adam's headset. All of it made him want to throw up. All of it made him ashamed to be human. There was no time to think about each separate event anymore. It all merged into one singular horror show inside his tormented mind.
Thought maybe there were fireworks or something related to the show, and they were shooting everybody in a very calm way.
And literally, there was just a very loud bang. The train derailed. There was smoke everywhere. There's a lot of serious injuries down there as well. A lot of serious head injuries.
How very much I've loved you. How very much I've tried my best to give you the good life.
There is reason to believe the Japanese city of Hiroshima, approximately the size of Memphis or Seattle or Rochester, New York, no longer exists. General Spud smiled when asked if the new atomic bomb would be dropped again in the near future. But every indication is that it will be. 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 Will be.
Adam, your species, they are vile. All of that was taken from only the last 100 years or so. Whoa, wait, please. Okay, that was bad. It was really bad. But there must be more to my species than this. Please. We can try some random samples of history. There must be other stories than these. Other stories from Earth.